be seated. All right. We apologize for the delay. We were all stuck in a function, and we are ready to roll now. As you'll notice, Justice Seda isn't with us today. She couldn't be with us today, but she is watching the webcast, and she will participate in deliberations as well. So with that, let's move on to our next case. It's docket number 67497, Southern California Edison versus State Department of Taxation. Are we ready to roll?
Okay.
Mr. Reed, come on up. And would you like to reserve any time?
I would. About 3 minutes, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Charles Reed, representing the appellant, Southern California Edison, or SCE, operator of the Mojave Electric Generating Facility in Laughlin, Nevada from 1970 to 2005. SCE has been pursuing claims for a refund of use taxes paid on the coal used at Mojave for 15 years. We're acting on behalf of ourselves and our customers, as well as the three other owners of Mojave, Nevada Power, and its customers here in Nevada, Salt River Project in Arizona, and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. My argument is in two parts. The first portion will address the Commerce Clause issue and the question of the required showing of competitive disadvantage. Unlike the appellants came before you in Sierra Pacific, SCE comes to this court with a record indicating that there are in-state competitors who are eligible to be exempt from the use and sales tax that SCE had to pay. These are competitors who are in the business of generating electricity. That is the business of the taxpayer, SCE, in this case. There's no doubt about the market in this situation. It is defined by the statute itself, NRS 372-270. It provides for an exemption from sales or use tax for minerals that are produced in the state of Nevada. Minerals include not only coal, which is not produced in Nevada in any quantity, but also oil, natural gas, and geothermal energy. Those last three are used as fuel to generate electricity, or can be. And in our trial of 8 days before Judge Russell, we put forward as much information as available to us as taxpayer about those entities that were eligible for this tax exemption, which this court has already recognized to be facially unconstitutional. There were, during our claims period, geothermal energy producers. For example, in 1998, there were 13 of them producing and reporting to the state. Four of them, at least, paid almost $600,000 in net proceeds tax.
Now, isn't the net proceeds tax entirely different? And how do you equate the fact that a geothermal plant is a favored competitor when it's not taking a resource from out of state, bringing it in to generate the electricity as a whole? And I do understand your position that the ultimate generation of electricity is what matters, but looking at it at a smaller scale, how do you address that? And also the vertical issue with geothermal.
Yes. Well, Your Honor, the scale here, the small scale, as you indicate, has to be the competitive fuels used to, or could be used, or are used to generate electricity. And that includes geothermal, because geothermal is exempt from the sales and use tax. And exist in this state. They did produce energy. They were eligible. They paid net proceeds. They were eligible for the exemption. Now, you're quite correct that the vertical integration question is a tough one. We can't and couldn't, through this litigation, determine the exact corporate structure of these geothermal wells and then the pipelines that move the steam and then the generation facilities. We don't know. Nor does the state, for that matter.
Whose burden is that, though, when you're seeking
well,
cash?
I think that
understanding geothermal perhaps is different in the sense that in most cases, oil owns land, produces the energy, and we don't know who may not own the well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a corporate structural ownership provision that should not govern here because McKesson, which is really the source of this approach that this department is urging, indicates that it's really the responsibility of the taxing authority. If they want to go after the advantaged competitor, then they should be doing the work to identify who those competitors are and going after them for taxes. That was not done here. What instead was done, the state simply said, the department said, well, there's no coal in Nevada. That's the end of the story. There couldn't be anybody advantaged by this unconstitutional statute. They didn't go on to look at, except in the context of our litigation, they did nothing as the taxing authority to say, who else is advantaged unconstitutionally who's in the same business as the taxpayer? And the answer is geothermal. We had to put on that case, and we ran into all the roadblocks you could imagine. We can't get tax returns. We can't audit. We don't know all those details. But McKesson says that the taxing authority has to make a good faith effort to administer and enforce a retroactive assessment. That's a quote from McKesson 496 at page 41, note 23. The department did none of that. They said there's no coal, you get no refund, you have to sue, you have to bring the case, which we did as best we can. But I can say in this area, Your Honor, that because of the barriers to a taxpayer to try to find on its own the advantaged competitors and find out who's taking what deductions and so forth, that's a barrier and a burden that this department has put upon this taxpayer. It can never be met. Therefore, the McKesson meaningful backward-looking relief of assessing a competitor is illusory, given the barriers the department has put up. And that was never the intention of the McKesson decision. I'd like to go on to address the TPT argument. That's the transaction privilege tax, which is assessed by the state of Arizona. If the TPT is, in essence, a sales tax in how it functions and works, then a credit against use tax here in Nevada is required by Nevada law and by the U.S. Constitution to prevent discrimination against interstate commerce. The department has three arguments against granting this TPT credit. One, it doesn't use the term sales tax. It's not titled sales tax. It's called a transaction privilege tax. Number two, it was assessed in Arizona on the seller, Peabody, the oil, the coal producer. And number three, actually they claim that when you really think about it, the TPT is a severance tax and therefore not comparable to a sales tax, not deserving of credit. Let's look at those three arguments. The name of the tax. The Supreme Court and this court has said repeatedly, and I'm quoting from Greg Dying versus Corey back in the 1940s, that the substance rather than the form is the controlling test in looking at how a tax functions. Quote, we are not concerned with what the tax is called, but what the tax does. Nevada itself has two taxes universally recognized as sales taxes that do not themselves use the title sales tax, just like the TPT. I'm referring to Chapter 374, the local school support tax, and Chapter 377, the city-county relief tax. They're sales taxes. It's acknowledged consistently. Nevada, in NRS 360B.070, says that a credit must be given in computing the use tax for any similar tax. It doesn't use the word or require it to be a sales tax with those words. It's any similar tax. Again, it's function. Now, let's look at the functions of these taxes. They're both imposed for the privilege, those words are used in both Nevada and Arizona, of engaging in business. In Nevada, it's the privilege of selling tangible personal property, 372-105. In Arizona, it's the privilege of doing business. But the business in that tax is the business of selling goods, because that's how the tax is computed. The TPT is identical in rate to the Arizona use tax. Again, that's a hallmark between sales and use tax. It's true here in Nevada. The Nevada sales tax is the same rate as the Nevada use tax. Both taxes have exclusions for sales for resale. Both taxes have provisions for sales, exclusions for sales of components, typical of sales taxes. Most importantly, they're both imposed on the gross proceeds. In other words, the sale price. They were imposed in this case on the same transaction, the sale of coal by Peabody to Edison. So it's not surprising, given this, that the consensus among experts, commentators, the courts, that in Arizona and elsewhere, is that the TBT is a sales tax. My favorite citation in this, and we have a number of them in the briefs, and I'm not going to repeat them, is the Arizona 2002 Tax Handbook, which, at the very start, under transaction privilege tax, says, and I quote, "The transaction privilege tax, TPT, is Arizona's version of a sales tax. There's no reason for Arizona to characterize it incorrectly." Both tax experts in our case, Professor Pomp and Professor Swain, both of whom are noted experts and have written extensively, both agree and testify that the Arizona TPT is a sales tax. The Hellerstein Treatise says the same thing. Matthew Bender's tax guide, the California Board of Equalization, in interpreting the California tax laws, on which much of Nevada's sales tax laws are based, has said in its guidance that it will give a credit for Arizona TPT when it computes the California use tax. And I can assure you, California is not a jurisdiction that gives up tax revenue easily. The state citations on this point are two cases that talk about how the TPT isn't called a sales tax. They are not credit cases. They don't deal with this issue. We've cited ones that do talk about the functional aspect of this tax being a sales tax. The Department's second argument, well, how about the fact that Peabody had to pay the tax instead of, and Edison was nominally required to pay the use tax. The NRS 372-105 states, notwithstanding the official imposition of the tax on the buyer in Nevada, that the sales tax is imposed on all retailers. It's well known that it's the retailer who has the ultimate responsibility to remit the taxes, the sales tax, in Nevada, as is the case in Arizona with the TPT.
You know, you're down to 2 minutes and 21 seconds if you want to
put it on my reservation. Okay, thank you. Let me... On the severance tax issue, this is not a severance tax. Arizona has severance taxes. I refer to Arizona's statute 42.5202. They're computed entirely differently. They're not computed on gross proceeds, which is exactly what's computed here. Failure to give an appropriate credit is a violation of Nevada statute that I cited earlier, as well as a violation and a discrimination of interstate commerce. Jefferson Line made that very clear, 514 U.S. 193, footnote 6. And finally, The department most recently has begun suggesting this actually was a garden variety sales transaction that occurred entirely in Nevada. Because the fact is, and there's no contest here, no fact issue, the contract called for title to change upon arrival of the coal in Nevada. And that's true. But possession of the coal moved from Peabody to Black Mesa Pipeline for purposes of transit, according to their contract, in Arizona. And both Arizona and Nevada define, among other criteria for a definition of a sale, for tax purposes, change of possession. When the change of possession occurred in Arizona, that is the nexus for Arizona's tax. Nothing wrong with Arizona's tax. You pay it. Nothing wrong, for purposes of this argument on credit, nothing wrong with the imposition of the use tax in Nevada, but the credit is essential. And without that, we have an obvious discrimination. We wind up paying a sales tax twice. That's the definition of a violation, and the only reason we did it was because we bought coal in Arizona. This is not what the parties faced, the utilities in Sierra Pacific, where they bought only their coal and paid only the use tax. They paid no sales tax in the Wyoming or Montana, wherever they bought their coal. So, if the department were to erroneously impose a use tax, it should have imposed a sales tax, then they've imposed the wrong tax, and a complete refund is in order. That's not, I think, likely what the department has in mind.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wien. Appreciate your argument today.
Mr. Van Dyke?
May it please the court. My name is Lawrence Van Dyke, and I represent the Department of Taxation in this case. And I'm going to focus this afternoon, what I'd like to focus this afternoon on is the TPT issue, because I think that I can provide some help to the court on that. When I came to these briefs and read the briefs from both sides, I was left with the question that they say, as you heard this afternoon, this is sales tax, and it looks like a sales tax, acts like a sales tax, and we said it was a sales tax. And I was left wondering, which is it? And so it took some work, but I actually was able to find out what Arizona statute they're referring to that they paid. And we know that it's difficult, but we know it's in a footnote in the brief, in footnote 25, in the opening brief. It's also, I think, cited on page 19 of the reply. And in the joint appendix, 359 page of joint appendix, actually shows the percentage that was paid, and it matches up precisely with the percentage of this particular transaction privileges tax, which, by the way, is different than the retail classification transaction privileges tax. So I'm going to back up a little bit. I want to spend a lot of my time on this because SE is correct that a tax, what kind of tax it is based on how it acts. And it's very clear the Supreme Court has said that. And so what we need to look at is how does this tax act? And I think there's been some misrepresentation on that. SE says in its brief on that page, page 27, note 25, the quote, all the characteristics of a generic sales tax discussed above apply to the TPT on mining proceeds, this particular TPT that they paid. But those who refer that on page 26, they actually say, as you heard this afternoon again, that Arizona's TPT that they paid is only charged to the end user and excludes sales for resale, just like a normal sales or use tax. So I'd like to look carefully at the statute this afternoon and see if that's actually the case. But before I do that, I want to touch on a few things to make sure that everybody understands why I'm focusing on this. And the first is the Jefferson Mines case that you just heard cited, the U.S. Supreme Court case from 95, makes very clear that you can stack, in tax parlance, you can stack severance taxes and use taxes. So no credit is required for a severance tax paid in one state for a sales tax paid in another state. I'll read it. It says there's no constitutional trouble inherent in the imposition of a sales tax in the state of delivery to the customer, even though the state of origin of the thing sold may have possessed a property, may have assessed a property or severance tax on. So in fact, if, as we argue in our briefs, and as I think will be very clear after this afternoon, it was a severance tax that was paid, then there is no credit required. What is the difference between a sales use tax and a severance tax? Well, the first difference between these is conceptual. A sales use tax is a consumption tax. Tax, people think of sales tax as a consumption tax. You're taxing the consumption of the product. You do that one of two ways. You either tax that final sale, if you can get to it, because the sale happened in your state, or if you can't, you tax the final use of it, and that's why you have these complementary sales and use taxes. Both of them are trying to tax that final consumption. A service tax is at the other end, and you're actually taxing the taking of the product from the state. And so, for instance, Nevada's overseas money tax that's at issue in this case is a type of severance tax. And what flows from that is some very big differences between sales use taxes and severance taxes. One of those is that sales use taxes almost always have an exemption for resale. You're not trying to tax every sale in the chain. You're only trying to tax that final sale or that final use. So sales tax, like Nevada's sales and use tax, has an exemption for resale. Sales, whereas severance taxes, because you're trying to tax the taking of the product, in fact, when it usually will be resold, they don't have an exemption for resale. You also severance taxes will tax the sale that happens out of state. For instance, Nevada's gross proceeds of mine tax doesn't care where you sell the gold that you want. You can sell the gold in Montana, and you're going to tax that gold that was as a gross proceeds under Nevada's gross proceeds of mine tax. Sales and use taxes, constitutionally, as SCE has noted, you can only tax a sale that happens in your state or a final use. You cannot extraterritorially tax a sale that happens in another state. The McLeod case from the U.S. Supreme Court talks about this. It says, for Arkansas to impose a tax on such a transaction would be to project its powers beyond its boundaries since it taxed an interstate transaction. So, another difference is usually severance taxes, because they're severance taxes, are only taxing the product that comes from that state. So we don't tax under Nevada gross proceeds of mine tax. We don't, if you bring gold into Nevada, we don't tax California gold out of Nevada. We're taxing the seller that got gold from Nevada. A sales or use tax doesn't care where the gold came from. If you go down to the sales and buy a ring, you're going to pay sales or use tax on that product, regardless of where the gold came from. So with that understanding, I think one thing that will be very helpful in clarifying the court is helpful to me at least, and that is, you heard it again this afternoon. SC talks about Arizona's transaction privileges tax like it's one monolithic, like it's just one transaction privileges tax. But in reality, it's a very broad tax and has multiple classifications. And so there's a little bit of a shell game, I think, in that oftentimes when they're referring to transaction privileges tax, they're referring to something called the retail classification. And in fact, the retail classification, which is not the tax they paid, it's over 5%, and the tax they paid is a 3.4% tax. They didn't pay it, Peabody did, but for ignoring that, the tax is different. The retail classification does in fact act very much like a generic sales tax. So they're correct with regard to the retail classification. There's an exemption for resale for the retail classification. There's all those things that I talked about. It only taxes in-state sales or in uses in the state. But of course that's not the TPG that they pay, or that they're seeking credit for, that Peabody paid. There's also, there is a category called, and it's in the same statute, it's in the TPT section of Arizona statutory code, and it's called a severance tax. But it's not the tax that they pay either, because what they label as a severance tax in Arizona is only paid on metal liquids, word I've never run into, but it basically means metallic mining. So you think gold, silver, tin, that kind of mining, Arizona has a TPT that applies to that. And they actually call it a severance tax. And like a severance tax, it acts like a severance tax. It doesn't have an exemption for resale. If you mine gold in Arizona, just like if you mine it here, you're going to pay that severance tax, what they call a severance tax, and then you're going to, regardless of whether it's resold, regardless of whether it's transported out of state. Then finally, and that's the statute that I brought here today on this board, 425072 is what they paid, and it's called a mining classification. So the big question is this a severance tax, or is it a sales use tax? Four things I want to point out today. The first one is Arizona's mining TPT. If you look at the very bottom, I apologize, you have to look over the bench, but at the very bottom, there's an administrative code that they promulgated under this statute, and that administrative code makes very clear that their TPT is charged on sale for resales, just like Arizona's metal liquids mining severance tax, just like Nevada's gross proceeds of mine tax, unlike Arizona's retail classification TPT, and unlike Nevada's generic sales and use tax. So the first evidence that this thing acts like a severance tax is that it is charged on sales from resale. And you see that in Section A of that administrative code.
But in this case, Peabody actually pays the state of Arizona the TPT tax, and then Edison reimburses them for ultimately reimburses them for what they've paid.
That's correct, Your Honor. And you can see that on that JA, on that Joint Appendix 357. That I cited to you earlier. You can see the bill from Peabody to...
Right, and why is that important?
I actually don't think that's important. I think there's some arguments made in the brief, but I'm not going to rest on those arguments. I mean, if it actually was a sales tax, I'm going to be really frank. I don't want you guys to rule on that basis, because then they'll have their cert petition to the U.S. Supreme Court will have some merit. So that's not a good basis to rule on. What I'm talking about here is very clear that this is a severance tax, as I go through this. And because the severance tax is homebook law, that there's no credit needed for it. I think there's, like I said, there's been a bit of a shell game. What has happened is SCE has represented this as if they've been paying the retail classification TP. And that's the confusion. You know, when they talk about how, oh, there's these Arizona taxing authorities and such that talk about how the TPT is a sales tax, they're talking about the retail classification. They're not talking about this mining one.
So first, which of the taxes was City of Phoenix, a 1985 Arizona Court of Appeals case, talking about?
I think it was
when it said that the tax was a privilege, is a business privilege tax, and is to be distinguished from a sales tax.
Yeah, and I think I can. So I looked at all of this, and I was trying to figure out. First, I was looking at this as if it was a retail classification tax that had been charged. And Arizona is, frankly, they talk about how Arizona says in some places that it's a sales tax, but you're absolutely correct, Ron. In other places, Arizona authorities, including the case you decided in other cases, talk about how even the retail classification sometimes doesn't act like a generic sales and use tax. But honestly, Your Honor, I don't think that any of those are relevant on either side, because I could not find any authorities. In all these authorities are talking about the retail classification, which is a completely different classification than this mining classification.
Well, was that the case in the Arizona Department of Revenue versus Robinson's Hardware, where they also said it's not a sales tax?
Yes, it was. And you're absolutely right, Your Honor. Arizona doesn't themselves talk about this as a sales tax. But the truth is that as for the retail tax,
well, it sort of does, where the Department of Revenue's website says the Arizona transaction privilege tax is commonly referred to as a sales tax. However, the tax is on the privilege of doing business in Arizona and is not a true sales tax. Although the transaction privilege tax is usually passed on to the consumer, it is actually a tax on the vendor.
You know, I looked at all those cases, Your Honor, and I don't think that those distinctions were held. I'm not sure those distinctions were held up in the U.S. Supreme Court on taxing. In other words,
you don't think the U.S. Supreme Court would give credit to how Arizona's Department of Revenue characterizes its own tax?
I think that the U.S. Supreme Court would do what it said in other cases and what SCE says, and that we don't disagree, and they would look to see how this tax acts. And for instance, as SCE says, Nevada itself...
So of all these various statutes, which one of these did SCE pay the tax under?
Under this statute, the Arizona Revised Statute 425072.
All right.
And the thing I want to focus on is, that's a very small little subsection of the TPT. So when Arizona authorities are talking about...
I got all that.
TPT.
When they filed their return, when Peabody filed its return with the Department of Taxation's Revenue Department,
yep,
under what statute was the tax being reported and paid?
It was 425072, and one of the ways we can know that is because the tax rate that they charged in their invoices to SCE is exactly the tax rate for the TPT, which is a different, for the mining TPT, which is a different tax rate. It's much lower than the tax rate for the retail classification. So unlike the retail classification, they charge it on sales from resale. They also charge regardless of the place of sale, which frankly would be unconstitutional if this actually was a sales and use tax, because you cannot, as I said before, The Supreme Court's made clear you can't charge a sales tax on a sale that happens out of state. I mean, it makes sense.
You spent a fair amount of time on the TPT question, but I would like you to address counsel's argument concerning whether the geothermal energy or geothermal companies are competitors in the context of the previous Sierra Pacific case.
Can I take 30 seconds and finish explaining the... So, I urge the court to look at the statute. It's charged regardless of the place of sale, which sales and use taxes don't. It's charged regardless of the place of final use. In fact, it's charged if there's no sale at all. If there's no sale at all,
it's charged. It wasn't really particularly developed in your brief, was it?
Well, Your Honor, the statute cited, and we do say I think honestly what happened, Your Honor, is that we had trouble figuring out what if you read to the brief, it's difficult to figure out what they did. There's a little bit of a hide the ball on what tax, which type of TPT tax they pay.
Okay, we continue, but
I don't think we waived it, Your Honor. I think we definitely argued that it was a severance tax, and I do want to help out the court.
Okay.
The last point on that is that Arizona's 9 TPT is only charged on minerals mined in state, which obviously means it's a severance tax.
You're holding up a piece of paper here. What's the record site on this?
This is the Joint Appendix 359, Your Honor. This is the bill. So Joint Appendix 359. So on the geothermal, Your Honor, I think there's two answers to that. One is, as this court said in Sierra Pacific, competitive markets are generally narrowly drawn, and what they're trying to pretend is that they're trying to compare coal with gas, oil, geothermal. And I would argue that alone is comparing apples and oranges, but really, that's not even part, because what they really supplied here, what they really bought was coal slurry. And so I think what they're really trying to compare is apple pie and oranges, or apple fritters and oranges, or something like that. I hardly think that would comport with what this court recognizes here in the Pacific, the competitive markets are narrowly drawn. So that's sort of the high-level answer to your question. The weeds answer to your question, Your Honor, I think is that there was a lot of testimony about this. Contrary to the way it was presented, there was a lot of testimony. Dr. McCann, Joint Appendix 1419 through 1420, and then all of his testimony, I'd urge the court to look at that, and you'll see that he gave line-by-line testimony about how geothermal is vertically integrated. And so I think that was never rebutted. Now, they say in the brief it was rebutted, but he never changed his testimony that there was never any sales tax paid in that process. So there's nobody competitively advantaged, Your Honors.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Van Dyke, for your argument. Mr. Reed, we appreciate you chewed up all your rebuttal time, as I tried to indicate.
Yeah, I just wondered because of the type of ball point, if I might.
No. I, in fact, warned you. You only had 2 minutes left on your rebuttal, and you chose to use it up. So we appreciate your arguments today, and we will go ahead and reconstitute for the next case.